Hey everyone, it's Jerome Parker, aka Master Shake. Today is January 3rd, 2021, episode 2, season 2 of the Code Life podcast. I am here today with Clifton Craig, a follower of mine on Twitter, who wanted to come on to the show, and welcome to have him. How you doing, Clifton?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on?
Oh man, great, great. You have a good New Year?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm just, you know, taking it all in. You know, 2020 was a disaster, as everybody knows. 2021, I'm looking, you know, ahead to see what, you know, what's going on, what happens, you know, in the new year. Things are going to get better. You know, we got a new president. Hopefully the COVID situation will calm down. You know, just I try to keep it positive.
Good, good. That's what's up. That's what's up. Mm-hmm. So tell us about yourself. Give us the breakdown of who Clifton Craig is, who you are, how you got into tech, and what do you currently do?
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. I mean, I've been in the game for about 22 years. I like to refer to myself as a full stack developer, full spelled with two O's, because I'm kind of foolish. You know, people who follow me on Twitter know that kind of like a weird sense of humor. So I started back in the day, way back in, what is it, 98, I think? Yeah, how can I forget? The day that I started was the day that I was blessed with my first daughter. I can never forget this date, December 8th, 1998. I got my first job as a software engineer. Back then, I was doing RPG programming for a lighting fixture company. And, you know, it's a very interesting story. But over the years, I've gotten into so many different kinds of technology, from back end to front end. I've done mobile. I've worked at many of the top tech companies, from Apple to Microsoft, Skype, AOL. I mean, you name it. I've pretty much done everything from building robots to building chat clients to building artificial intelligence, text-to-speech, voice recognition. I'm a jack of all trades. I generally love what I do. And I'm just an all-around coder that likes to write code.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So where are you based?
Right now I'm in Santa Clara, California, and I'm working at Samsung as at our, what do you call it, the ad visual ad display division.
Okay. I used to work at Apple in Santa Clara.
Okay.
Portrayal.
I was at Apple doing what was it? I was working on iTunes. That was one of the hugest projects I ever worked on. Like, that was mostly Java stack, and I'm an old Java guy. Like, I know the JVM like the back of my hand, but this job, for whatever reason, when I was at Apple, that was one of the more complicated, I guess you could say, projects ever. I mean, it's one of the biggest software platforms. I mean, the thing spans multiple servers. It's got billions of lines of code, mostly spaghetti code. It was a nightmare. It was not one of the more fun projects. I mean, I have dreams of working for Apple way back when I was at MapQuest, and I never thought I'd actually get here to sunny California and actually had that opportunity. When I got there, I was kind of surprised. You know how they say never meet your idols or never meet your heroes. This is definitely a case of me walking into something. I was like, wow, this could be my dream job. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is how you guys do software here? I mean, no hate on Apple or anything, but wow, it was eye-opening.
Oh man, we gotta spend some time talking to compare our Apple stories, because my sentiments were the exact same. But okay, cool. So how old were you when you got your first job?
About 22 years old.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I was working part-time. I was working for a temporary company, like a temp agency at this lighting fixture company. And it was kind of interesting because I was there as a file clerk, and, you know, I didn't have anything. You know, my girlfriend at the time was pregnant. I didn't have anything. Like, I was, you know, pretty much living in my mom's basement, very minimal source of income. I didn't know if the job was going to last, but I was going to tech school, Setone Institute out in New Jersey at the time. And I never forget, it was kind of a dark time in my life because, you know, I had a baby on the way, you know, brand new father, you know, she was pregnant and I didn't know what to do. I was trying to find a place for us to live. I was like, I got to get out of my mom's apartment. And I'm working at this temp agency and, you know, I'm going to tech school and the job was only supposed to last through the holiday season, I believe. I was like a seasonal employee. So over the Christmas holiday, I think my job was supposed to end. So I was working there and I never forget because I was taking Excel and PowerPoint and Word classes at my computer school and they were teaching me how to do mail merges. And, you know, when I was at this company working, they would typically give me file work, you know, take the files over there, alphabetize this, or take this down to the mail room. And then some of the ladies that I was working with, I guess they took pity on me. They saw me there working hard. And I guess looking bored, and they wanted to give me something to make me feel like I was part of the team. They, you know, they kind of took a liking to me. So they gave me this project. The one lady said, here, I got these labels that we want to print out, and we have an Excel spreadsheet with all these addresses. Can you type these addresses into this Word document so that we can print labels? It's like, you know, 200, 300, 500 pages of 500 like multiple pages of addresses, and they thought it was gonna take me like the rest of my tenure there. And I did that job in like 20 minutes or 15 minutes actually. I just did a quick mail merge, you know, double check my work, and I was like done. I got all the labels printed, and the lady looked at me like, how did you do that? How'd you finish so fast? And I mean, that's how they got to know that was, you know, learning software. And from that point on, you know, they introduced me to the head of IT, and he, you know, interviewed me and was trying to get me hired at various places and then eventually decided to give me a job there. And that's kind of how my career started.
Nice. Nice. Cool. All right. So currently, right now, what projects are you working on now?
Right now, I'm doing some Android work on the side. I'm doing mostly React and JavaScript front end and Ruby on Rails back end and a little bit of Erlang. And I do a lot with, like, you know, continuous integration, build server. I do a little bit of SRE, DevOps stuff. I'm, you know, kind of like the one of the leads on our team. So I'm kind of responsible for everything that goes on from the, in this application from the, you know, top to the bottom. And make sure we have, you know, guaranteed, you know, daily releases, responding to issues, first responder kind of stuff. I kind of manage a lot. So that's my day job. And then after hours, you know, I have side projects, of course. Like, I tinker with my robots. I do stuff with Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, Android work. I'm trying to reteach myself Java at the time, right now, as a matter of fact, because I'm learning Kotlin again. Like, I took a Kotlin class a while ago when it first came out, but I haven't really dug into it deep enough. And I'm finding there's so much that has changed just in the Java stack layer. So, like, wow, amazed that I got to go back and reteach myself even like Java generics. Like, I thought I knew how to do this stuff back in the day, but it's like brand new because I haven't been, you know, you remove yourself from a specific technology for a while and then you're back in it. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, it's like me with C++.
Yeah, things change dramatically.
Yeah, when I tried to learn C++ 11, I was like, whoa.
Yes, C11, yeah, stuff. With the auto keyword and yeah, that stuff was, it was crazy. I've never been like a C guy. No. Like I dabble with C, but C kind of scares me. C++ I can hack a little bit. I've done Objective-C, you know. Swift is another language I tinkered with when I was working at GE for a while. You know, I was never a professional with Swift, but I could hack it.
Oh, which GE were you at? I was at GE Healthcare and GE Lighting. I was
So I was in San Ramon. I was GE Digital. We were doing built a platform, Predix platform, a cloud platform, and it was supposed to compete with like the AWS's and Azure's, but it never really panned out to be what we thought it was going to be. That was actually an interesting experience as well, because there I actually built, I was on a small team of developers, and we built an entire framework, develop an SDK and a framework where you can build mobile apps using, JavaScript and React, and deploy them to our cloud. They would work offline. It was like an offline first framework that you can use for building apps. And we would market our product around, you know, GE, because the way GE works, like a division of subdivisions and, you know, other divisions within the company would use our product. We did like developer conferences and outreach to the dev community.
Right.
And yeah, that was actually a really fun project because that's when I started getting into robotics a lot more. Like, I was tinkering with Arduinos, and they had like the whole GE, you know, IoT ecosystem that you can play around with, and I was trying to explore what they had and, you know, the stuff that they had and compare it with the stuff that I learned. We actually built a little robot that I called Bluebot and used our Predix platform to control this thing. I got it sitting on my counter right here. He's looking at me, and I love this thing. It's like I built this Android app using React and JavaScript and using our framework and installed it on my Android and on an iOS device. Like, it was multi-platform, the same code run on both devices, and we like created like a little NES image graphic to be the remote control and use that to control the robot on the phone. It was kind of cool.
So any other of your side projects that you like that you want to turn into a business or making any side income
for
you?
I want to get back into writing books. I published one book, Learn Android Studio, way back when Android Studio first dropped, and I want to, you know, get back into that. I've always had some, you know, side projects, some inventions cooking in the back of my mind. A couple of things that I wanted to get patented. I don't want to discuss it too much, but some kind of interesting ideas, concepts that have not been tried before. And I'm kind of amazed that, you know, nobody started these things. Like, there's one in particular that came up as a result of me, you know, visiting my daughter's school, and I was like, oh, that's actually a pretty good idea. I wonder if I can capture this idea in code and turn it into something. And it's something that has not been done before. I'll probably be looking to get a patent on that sometime this year. Like, I'm in the back of my mind, I've been, you know, whiteboarding and, you know, spending a little bit of time. You know, my time gets divided throughout my day because I have so many different obligations, so it's kind of difficult for me to keep track of various projects. I got a lot of stuff that I start and don't finish. I'm like that guy where you go into his garage, he's got parts and things and, you know, ideas that are half cooked and robots that don't have feet and torsos that don't have a head. You know, that's me. I got a lot of stuff happening.
Cool. All right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break from our sponsors, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you about what your plans are for the future and any advice that you have for developers, especially people looking to get into software development in 2021. We'll be back. Tired of doing technical interviews and rounds of them? TripleByte is a platform that allows you to take one technical interview and have companies such as Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook bid on you for a job. Click on the link in the show notes to get started for free. It is always free, and offers will come to you in your mailbox. Click to get started. Back. So, yeah. Clifton, what are your plans not only for this year, but going forward for the rest of your career? You said you're 22 years into your career, so you're about two-thirds of the way done for traditional retirement. So what are you looking to do in this last stretch?
It's an interesting question because I'm at a point in my career where, you know, I have open up so many opportunities. You know, I'm looking to get into management. You know, right now I'm functioning as a team lead. I'm, you know, leaning toward getting into management, but I don't want to be too far removed from coding. So I don't know. I'm kind of straddling that fence right now in my current position. But I would say long term, I want to continue writing code. I want to, you know, eventually mentor, you know, teach. Maybe build my own product, my own app or something, published. I never actually published an app to the App Store. I built apps for both Android and iOS, you know, on my own, but I've never really published anything. So that's one thing that's on my bucket list. Like, I want to build my own app, maybe, you know, launch a company around it. I don't know. I got so many different ways or directions I can go with that just thought. It's exciting, and it's an exciting time with all these new technologies and things that you could do today that weren't possible back when I started. I mean, let's just talk about how coding was back when I started. Back then, when I, you know, back in, what was it, 98, there was, you know, we didn't have the benefit of going online and Googling and pulling information up immediately to, you know.
I mean, it didn't come out to 2005.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
And I think I was just talking about this the other day with my daughter. I was like, I remember, you know, back when I started, and I would be in a laundry room doing laundry and reading tech manuals, like the thick tech manuals, like the Rocks and the A-Press, you know, books from like Michael Kay or Head First Java series, and, you know, reading that and just consuming that information and trying to learn how. And back then, like, you couldn't like do stuff online and type into a, you know, command line or do a repo and actually experiment with code like you could do today. You had to like consume that information, think about it, process it in your mind, go home, wait till you had access to a computer, and then try some of the stuff that, you know, that's how I, that was my hustle back in the day. That's how I was like trying to get ahead. So, yeah, I mean, we have so much that has, you know, changed the landscape for us these days. You know, the ability to just go online. You don't even have to install these SDKs on your computer. Like back then, you know, you had to download software, click an .exe file, or, you know, open a DMG, or, you know, install something and manage all these different conflicting versions of software on your machine. Nowadays, you can just go on your web browser and try out the new version of Kotlin or Golang and do an entire walkthrough and, you know, interactively learn. Machine learning, artificial intelligence and deep learning, they have exercises. You can do like a Python notebook right in the cloud and, you know, start exploring and tinkering with these technologies. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that gets me excited.
Awesome. So, what advice do you give to people who are wanting to learn how to code this year in 2021? And what advice do you have to people who are looking for their first job in coding?
Well, the first thing I would say is ask questions. Don't be afraid to, you know, reach out. You're not supposed to have all the answers. I think the biggest misconception, especially for brand new coders, is that you're supposed to be some brilliant genius and know everything from top to bottom from the beginning. So my word of advice for those who are just getting started is don't be afraid to learn. I mean, feel free to reach out for help, ask questions, explore, and be creative. The traditional approach of, or, you know, what we've come to learn as software developers is actually broken. You know, writing code as one big pile and just, you know, throwing it into some machine and having to execute, that's proven problematic over the years. And believe it or not, so many companies, so many people still have that mindset and they're stuck, you know, they're locked into that frame of thinking. So I would encourage people getting started to, you know, take a different approach, to learn how to break a problem apart. I mean, I think the secret to becoming successful is not trying to do it all at once. Taking small bite-sized chunks and doing the simplest, silliest thing that works. That's kind of my motto. You know, when people who get to know me, they know that I always, you know, preach, you know, do the simplest thing that works. You know, whenever you get stuck, it's like, oh, what's the very next simple, stupid thing that I could throw in my command line or throw in the middle of this program to make some sort of progress? So small progress is better than no progress. What was the other question?
Okay. And people who are looking to get their first programming job.
Yeah,
this year.
So be consistent, market yourself. You know, it doesn't hurt to build, you know, a social media profile, whether you're on Instagram or your Twitters or your Snapchats or whatever. Build a profile, have a small portfolio of things that you do. Also, you don't have to be, you know, that hermit that's always writing code. Like, I caution people, especially those of us who are really passionate and like to, you know, go offline and, you know, work extended hours. I caution people to break away from that and actually experience life. You know, it's not all about coding every day and locking yourself into a dungeon and, you know, becoming this hermit. Like, build yourself up, build your brand up, you know, be different, you know, show diversity, show that you could bring something beyond just software to the table, because building software is more than just writing code and, you know, understanding algorithms. It's the people part of it. When you are being interviewed for the first time, a lot of people, a lot of companies are looking for somebody who can not just write code, but can, you know, mesh with the team, you know, that has a personality, that brings something unique. You know, when I interview people, I'm looking for things like, you know, what are your passions? What do you like to do outside of coding? You know, are you into nature? Do you explore? Are you into puzzles? Do you play chess? You know, anything, you know, something that's different. Do you play music? You know, so be versatile and be bold. You know, don't be afraid to be yourself. You know, when you're being interviewed and you get kind of closed off, it presents a certain persona that you're not willing to learn. So the easiest way to get hired in a company is to show that you're not thinking that you're the end point, but, you know, you're open, you're malleable, you can be molded basically and taught and can grow with the team. So yeah, if you're trying to get that first job, be ready to be rejected. You're going to get a lot of no's. You're going to get told no 100 times before you get told yes, and that's okay. Fail fast and fail often.
Okay. Cool. Let's see. What else do I have to ask you? So, in your experience, in your 22 years as a software engineer, what adversities have you face both in the office and outside of the office, and how did
adversities is a really good topic. So I've had so many struggles and, you know, battles that I had to. My biggest battle was with myself, you know, early on in my career, thinking that I knew everything, and, you know, I have a thing with arrogance. So learning to humble myself and actually listen to people and get along with people who disagree with me, that was one of my biggest obstacles. I remember working on teams with people who, in a lot of tech companies, you have like the cool crowd, almost like high school, the cool kids or the cool developers that get assigned on decent projects, and everybody wants to fit in and think they need to present themselves a certain way. And I kind of fell victim to that and tried to hang out with the cool kids and fit in, but I was always that oddball. You know, even back in high school, I was always a kid that, you know, was different, thought different. I used a different IDE to everybody else. You know, I never quite fit in. So my biggest obstacle, my biggest hurdle early on in my career was learning that my place was not to fit in. You know, the things that were making me stick out were actually things that were my strengths. And, you know, by trying to homogenize or mold myself into this idealistic cool kids club was actually messing me up. So, you know, over the years, I think that's kind of how a lot of my stupid personality came out. It's like I stopped caring about what everybody else in the company thought, and stopped caring about how everybody else in the company looked at me. You know, also the majority of my career until I moved out to California, I was primarily working around, you know, older white gentlemen, and, you know, being a black guy in the industry, you know, you naturally feel isolated. You know, you don't have anybody else that looks like you or thinks like you. You can't, you know, I can't talk about hip hop music or the things that I'm into, you know, the people that are around me. So, yeah, again, that was an obstacle, something I had to, you know, get used to, knowing that, you know, I am unique, and knowing that, you know, I don't fit in, and maybe I'm not supposed to fit in. Instead of, you know, trying to fit in, I'm supposed to be the agent of change, basically, the guy that actually breaks the mold. And that's what a lot of places and businesses are actually looking for. Somebody who is unique, somebody who can break the norm. You know, that's what they're talking about when they say disruption or, you know, innovation. They want somebody who is not cookie cutter, doesn't, you know, fit into this, you know, square hole. You know, somebody just star-shaped, you know, and then, you know, just that uniqueness. So yeah, that was one of my earlier, I guess, challenges. I mean, I had challenges dealing with specific individuals, you know, especially my first couple of experiences being a team lead. I had to lead people who didn't want to be led. And how do you interact with another engineer who thinks or who knows that they know more than you, who may be smarter than me, but, you know, I have a certain insight or a certain responsibility to, you know, lead the team. How do you make that, you know, adjustment? So, you know, especially always feeling that, you know, I had self-esteem issues early on, so I always thought that I wasn't the smartest, you know, person on the team. And being in charge of people, you know, I was on a team where my manager, believe it or not, was actually reporting to me. And that's something that, you know, a lot of tech companies do, you know, just because you're a manager, you know, sometimes the managers write code, and some of the better managers, you know their place in the team is, you know, I could be a contributor as well as a manager. So I was on this one project. It was the iPhone project back when I was at MapQuest. And one of the coolest managers I ever worked under, he said, you know what, Cliff, I'm going to be on your team. I'm the tech manager. They assigned me as a tech manager, but you know, you're a little bit more familiar with this technology than I am. So I'm going to be on paper your manager, but I'm going to actually be reporting into you. So you guide us and you take the lead. So that's, you know, and my whole thing with that experience was like, it's scary because I was in a position that I felt underqualified. I mean, unqualified, you know, I felt like I was out of my league. I'm like, wow, I got everybody from the top brass of the company, you know, the big executives were looking at this project. It was the very first iOS project in the company. It was when the iOS SDK was first released. So it's like a huge deal. And I'm supposed to be leading it. And I don't know what I'm doing. And my whole career has been moments like, you know, I don't belong here. Yeah, I get thrown into these situations where I am the least qualified person to take, you know, the reins, and I'm, you know, being put in charge. So that's just been my whole experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Wow. Well, I mean, that's really awesome. When I was at Sephora, I got put on as lead. That was the first time I was put on officially as lead engineer. And that, you know, scared the hell out of me. And after, you know, just after the first time, then it gets easier and easier, but it never really gets to a point where you're like completely comfortable leading a whole project. Like, there's always gonna be that anxiety. But I don't have any questions.
Ask you. Do you have anything you want to ask me? Doing all kinds of stuff, like building stuff with the, you know, the Raspberry Pi. You built your own cell phone. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, how's all that coming along?
Oh man, that's cool. So I got some more SIM cards coming in on Tuesday. I'm actually looking at it right now. So the origin of it started. Was, you know, I was like, I have a Sprint / T-Mobile phone, and my ex-wife, I pay for her phone bill too, and like both of them combined with everything is like almost $200 a month, and I'm like, why am I paying this much? And I've been using Twilio for a long time, and I saw that Twilio has their SIM card that you can order. So, you know, I'm very familiar with your API and everything, and I did the price and now the price breakdown, and I looked at how much data I use per month. And I'm like, I average around 2 gigs per month. So I was like, okay, I can bring the cell phone bill from $180 down to like $40. And then I was, so it was going to be just for my cell phone. So I have this Raspberry Pi, and I wanted to build a Bitcoin ATM, and I was thinking, I was like, well, I need data, and then I was like, well, I could use a SIM, and I was like, oh, snap, it's a Twilio. So, you know, I got the stuff, and then I was like, well, there's no reason I can't use it as a cell phone as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, I just got a whole bunch of Raspberry Pis, and One of them is my Bitcoin ATM. It's actually I'm just waiting on this next SIM card to come through, and I'm gonna drop that off at the corner store in my neighborhood. And I got a coin validator coming in, and I gotta get the Chases, and I'm building that like Tuesday or Wednesday. And then
how did you get started into all this coin. Like, you know, IoT stuff, like, and what started you, prompted you, or inspired you to start building stuff like that?
So when I was 9, I got my first robotics kit. When I was 8, I started coding when I was 8, and then my mom got me a robot at 9. And ever since then, I was just like, I love robotics and nanotechnology, and it's like tinker stuff. I used to just like bust open like old broken tech, like old TVs and stuff. I like break them open so I could take the magnets and copper out.
Yeah, I was the same way. I remember breaking apart with my old radios and not knowing how to put it back together, but just, you know, open it up to figure out how it works. Like, what is this component here? What's this little shiny thing? I had one of those, we call those electronic kits from Radio Shack, where, you know, they do transistors and everything way back. I think I had to be like 8 or 9 years old, too. That's kind of how I got started, you know, interested in electronics. But I think I was coding back when I was like 6 years old, when they had the Intellivision computer system. That was my first introduction to programming. I was, you know, like 6 years old. I used to carry around this thick book on basic programming, and I was trying to build, learn how to build my own video games, because you could steal the graphics from the games and off the cartridge and like animate them on the screen. And I figured out how to, you know, grab that little running guy from, what was it, the Night Stalker game, kind of have him glide across the screen and stuff like that. So that's kind of got me bit when I was younger. But yeah, that's
yeah, that was basically me with Java. I learned Java when I was 8 to build video games.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, my mom was going to school. She's a project manager. She had to take 2 programming classes. One was in basic, one was in Java, and COBOL. Anyway, so she had a book, and long story short, I found the book. It was a Deedle and Deedle Java 3rd edition. It looked really cool to me. I started reading it. Mm-hmm. It was talking about video games, and then I was hooked. And then over the course of a year, I just, you know, read and taught myself. And, you know, it took me a while. I mean, at first it was mostly just like, I'm just copying what I'm seeing. But as, you know, over time, it started clicking. It was like a snowball effect. You know, I remember just one day I just like had like this like epiphany and everything made sense.
I got a question for you. This is something I ask people when I interview them all the time. It's one of my favorite questions. Have you ever had what I call like a rock star moment? It's like one of those moments where you want to grab the person to sit next to you and just smash their face into your screen and say, look at this cool thing I built. You know, look how cool this is. Like, can you explain like one of those moments where maybe you wrote some code, you know, over the weekend and came in and it magically started working, or made 752 edits to a file and compiled and built without any errors? Like, have you had any of those moments like that you want to share?
I have moments like that every day. Like my girlfriend, you know, I own my company, and you know, we have employees and all that good stuff. And you would think that I wouldn't get excited about little stuff, but you know, every day I'm like just working on some little thing, and I'll show my girlfriend. I'm like, hey, Amber, come look at this, and like I'm like jumping for joy, and she was like, you look like a kid in the candy. Every time I make something,
like, you know, it's going on a screen. I never forget. I had a couple moments like that where it's like, you know, you build something and, you know, I've changed the value of this number that's coming out on the screen here, and I'm trying to explain it to my daughter who knows nothing about programming. But to me, it's the most exciting moment in like history. It's like, you know, I've rediscovered the Titanic or something like that. It's huge for me. And she's like, yeah, Dad, whatever. I'm going back to my Instagram, whatever.
Yeah. But well, we have this has been a really good interview. Do you why don't you plug your social media?
Okay, yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm most active on Twitter, Cliff76, or what is it, ClifTonC76, I'm sorry. And I'm also on Instagram, but I don't do much on Instagram. I'm actually looking for more developers on Instagram. If you have any people that you know of that you follow, you know, give them a follow as well. But yeah, that's pretty much me. Like, I just tweet a lot of stupid stuff. I don't really have too much outside of that. Again, I wrote a book, but that book is so old. Like, I'm gonna do another one. That's my next thing. Like, when I have something to plug, I'm gonna come back here and actually plug it. I don't feel like I have anything to plug right now.
Okay, cool. Well, I definitely would love to have you back on later in the year, possibly. And I will have this uploaded very soon. And
awesome.
Great. I feel like a glimpse in the future, you know, like older than me, and we've been like or coding for a long time, and I've never actually met another black male who had that much experience.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, first time I actually saw somebody else, another black person in the industry. Again, I was working at Skype, and we hired this black lady on our team, and she was actually sharp. But I remember when she joined, I'm looking at her, and she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her. I'm like, y'all do exist? There's actually black programmers, black women programmers? It's like a unicorn. Like, I'd never seen anything like that before. It's amazing. It speaks to something in the industry, though. I mean, I wish there was more diversity. I mean, I see it more now. Like, you know, since then, I've been, you know, around other teams, and, you know, we got black people on my team right now. When I was at GE, like, that was the most black people I ever worked around in history. Like, we had enough to almost form a basketball team. I was surprised. Like, wow, it's like 3, 4, 5 of us on one team. I was excited. I'm like, wow, this is unprecedented. But it happens in small chunks and pockets, small pockets, depending on which company, you know, what opportunity you're, you know, engaged with. But there are places. We gotta break that thinking, though. You know, we gotta open the gates, you know. That's why I like, you know, people like yourself that are out there, you know, promoting and, you know, trying to make this technology accessible to more people, you know, that come from neighborhoods like us that think we can't do it. Because, you know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist. You don't need to be good. I suck at math, for example. You know, I'm not smart. I just like what I do.
Mm-hmm. Facts. Okay. Yeah. Bro, once again, I appreciate having you on, and I will make sure that once the episode's uploaded and live, you know, give you the link and we can share it. And
all right. Thank you.
Take it from there. Well, I'll talk to you later.